Well, there is this movement and trend today called minimalism, which is fascinating and inspiring and challenging. And maybe some of you have seen it or followed it a bit by watching different documentaries or listening to podcasts or reading one of the bazillion blog posts that exists online about minimalism. And you may have noticed that there are some who really can take it to an extreme. And so this is a photo of a guy named Andrew Hyde who blogs about how he lives with only 15 things. And these are his 15 things that he lives with. He has no house, no car, and he says that what people ask him most often is, hey, how often do you do laundry? And how many pairs of underwear do you own? Minimalism has also sparked what is this trend called the tiny house movement. So there are even whole entire families will move into a space that is somewhere between 200 and 300 square feet. And right here in Ballard, you can rent these micro studios that are about that size, or you can get what are known as apodments. This is one of the micro studios here in Seattle. And they call these apodments something that is no different than just a sleeping unit, highly minimal and highly functional. And these have been growing in popularity in urban areas as different urban areas are trying to find ways to create affordable housing and to address the more densely populated regions that there are and bring different housing into that. And so we get things like this. There was someone that I was listening to who described how it occurred to him that he only really needed one plate and one cup and one set of silverware to live off of because he noticed that any extra dishes in the house tended to make him lazy. So they would just pile up in the sink and he wouldn't wash them. So he dealt with that by getting rid of all of his dishes and plates except for that one set that he would use. And so he would just immediately wash that one dish or cup or plate after each use so he could use it again. Then there are others, if you follow this, who say, well, everything can be digitized, so why even bother owning books or CDs or holding on to printed photos and paper anything? And if you follow Steve Jobs at all, he was a guy who said, hey, if I could just eliminate the decision about what I need to wear, then I'll have more creative space to put into the other decisions in life. And so Steve Jobs began every day to wear the same outfit, a pair of jeans and a black turtleneck, and he wore that every day. There's another person I read about who would stress about paint color. So she painted the entire house completely white. And then there was this other guy who got rid of all of his furniture, including his bed, because people are finding that there can be peace in having less stuff, less around to clean, the peace of the wide open space, stuff that can minimize the distractions and can help us be more organized. So have you guys ever tried minimalism out? Have you ever done one of these 30-day challenges or one of those where they say just live with only 30 articles of clothing, including all the accessories for 30 articles for 30 days or any of that? It's this fascinating thing, and maybe if you haven't actually done it, maybe you've thought about it and what that would be like, or you've taken that vacation where you've crammed everything in one tiny bag, and you're like, I've gotten a taste of minimalism. I know what this is. But it reveals an awful lot about the role of stuff in our lives when we begin to think about minimalism and these decisions. Well, there's an article that was in the New York Times called When the Gospel of Minimalism Collides with Daily Life. And it's about these different people that went down the extreme minimalism path but found that even minimalism itself can become an unsustainable ideal, something that misses the heart of what may have been so attractive and freeing about it in the first place. And so there's some people that noticed, they said, well, it seems though that having some stuff to remind them about special memories is a meaningful thing. There are others who said, yeah, but color and design can also be peaceful and relaxing. And then there are these environmental psychologists who will actually study this stuff, and they say, you know, we've actually never found an agreed upon formula for the best square foot per person ratio. And then they look into it and they've begun to notice that there can even be negative health consequences for those who go too extreme with minimalism. This increased stress, and sometimes it's led to domestic violence or some kinds of substance abuse in the home. Well, if you follow the minimalists at all and you ask Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus, these two guys known as the minimalists together, they would say, minimalism is a tool, not an end in and of itself. And so their main question is, how do you rid yourself of life's excess in favor of focusing on what's important so you can find happiness, fulfillment, and freedom? You may have noticed that material things, our stuff, our possessions, has this huge impact on our sense of well-being. And that's even noted in our culture by all the conversation around this. That the physical is very much interconnected to our spiritual, emotional, and mental health. As I was getting ready for this week's sermon, I was reading a commentator, and this guy noted that almost every chapter of both the Gospel of Luke and the book of Acts have some reference to money or material resources. So this raises a question for us. What we do with possessions reveals a lot about who we are. So what does it reveal, and what do we do with possessions? What do possessions reveal to us about our values, our interests, our passions, and our true self? Our stuff tends to reveal our stuff, and stuff has deep ties to our understanding of the meaning of life and our purpose in the world. So today we're going to be taking a look at a parable that's found in Luke chapter 12. And Jesus has an awful lot to say about the material world and things and how those things have an effect on our psyche. That word psyche is repeated several times throughout this chapter, and it's referring to our soul and our inner life. And so for Jesus to talk about the coming kingdom means to talk about earthly things. The spiritual world and the material world are inseparable when talking about a life of discipleship. There's even this phrase that maybe you've heard often said and quoted, but it's also found in this chapter in Luke chapter 12, where Jesus says, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be too." Today's parable is one of the more difficult ones. At least I've noticed that, especially for myself, but I think it is for a lot of people, not so much because of the language or the mystery of it, but because of the practical and very straightforward message that it communicates to those who are hearing it. So again, it's found in Luke chapter 12, verses 15 to 21. And right before that, to set it up, Jesus is teaching, and someone from the crowd says to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me," which you have to kind of smile at this guy for bringing the family drama up right in front of that crowd, like right there in front of everybody and those hearing it. And so he says, "Hey, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance." And Jesus says to him, "Man, who appointed me as judge or referee between you and your brother? So this is where Jesus pulls his classic move, and he shifts the attention back on the person who's making a demand or asking a question or bringing up some kind of challenge right there in the crowd. And you can feel the energy of the man speaking with Jesus from the crowd. He's kind of like, Jesus, tell my brother. There's this sense of exasperation. Maybe he's got a hand on his hip and there's a little self-righteousness, whatever you do in that culture. And this guy's thinking, hey, that's not fair. You tell my brother how it is kind of attitude that this guy brings. And Jesus takes that finger and he points it right back at the guy to take a look at himself. And this is what Jesus kind of gets at as he hears this guy raising this issue and making a demand. This is how the story continues. Then Jesus said to them, "Watch out. Guard yourself against all kinds of greed. After all, one's life isn't determined by one's possessions, even when someone is very wealthy." Then he told them a parable. A certain rich man's land produced a bountiful crop. He said to himself, "What will I do? I have no place to store my harvest." Then he thought, "Here's what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. That's where I'll store all my grain and goods. I'll say to myself, 'You have stored up plenty of goods, enough for several years. Take it easy, eat, drink, and enjoy yourself.'" But God said to him, "Fool, tonight you will die. Now, who will get the things you have prepared for yourself? This is the way it will be for those who hoard things for themselves and aren't rich toward God." So here's Jesus teaching a crowd of people what it means to follow him. And up to this moment, this entire time, he's been talking about not being afraid and not worrying. That if God cares for even the sparrows, Jesus says, won't God also look out for you? So you don't be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows. So as this guy is hearing Jesus talk about these things, something begins stirring inside of him, and it gets him thinking. And there's this particular situation in his own life that's been eating at him, and it's created a lot of angst inside. And he wants what he thinks belongs to him. I mean, an inheritance is a big deal. But notice what Jesus does. What Jesus does is he hears the thing going on behind the actual situation. He gets to the real issue behind the demand. I mean, what is this guy really concerned about when he's asking the questions about this inheritance? If you look at the parable, there are two distinct direct statements from Jesus that surround the parable that help bring insight into the situation and what it is that Jesus is noticing is going on behind it all. Jesus says this. He says, "One's life isn't determined by one's possessions, and also fools are those who hoard things for themselves and aren't rich toward God." What is the man really after by demanding his part of the inheritance? In this instance, Jesus is not addressing questions about justice or fairness. The inheritance is really about something that is deeper for this man. And so Jesus gets at it by talking to him about attachment and what this guy is hoping possessions will do for him. One's life, he says, isn't determined by one's possessions, even when someone is very wealthy. So when you're hearing this parable, rich or poor or anywhere in between, this parable is relevant to everyone because it asks the question, wherever you are on the socioeconomic spectrum, are you letting possessions determine your life? what you have or do not have. How are things affecting your life? So look again at the rich man in this parable. Why does he build bigger barns? Is you're kind of glancing through part of that story there. Why does he store up goods? He's had this kind of unexpected windfall. So his land, it says, produces a bountiful crop. And so there's this sense that it's his land that has produced this. He's had this kind of thing that's come, and this extra produce is something that's out of his control. It's not related to some kind of business move that he makes or some new product that he's starting to use. He has this extra crop. And so the man says to himself, what will I do? I have no place to store my harvest. And as he thinks about it, he says, well, I will store it and build bigger barns. Look again at that last verse of the parable there, that Jesus, as he's talking about what this guy has and what's going on, he talks about hoarding. And he says that those who hoard for themselves things aren't rich toward God. So Jesus begins to focus in on this idea about hoarding. So I want to pause here for a moment because the idea of hoarding often goes very misunderstood in our culture. We have these TV shows that show these extreme cases of hoarding, and I know that some people will make jokes about it. But I looked it up, and it is estimated that about 6% of the population of the U.S. has what would be considered a hoarding disorder. And it's definitely not something to laugh at. So I want to be careful here that as we talk about possessions and as we talk about hoarding, we don't misuse a label or become insensitive to the struggle of millions of people in the United States where hoarding is something that's bigger than simply a need to declutter or organize stuff. What I think that we can do together in this space and together with one another, and that applies to all of us, where hoarding in this context does apply to all of us. And what Jesus is getting at here in this parable is that hoarding isn't really about the stuff as much as it is about the underlying anxiety that a person carries around. You can throw away or organize and clean the stuff, but until a person deals with the underlying anxiety and emotion, the stuff will always reaccumulate. And so what a person does with stuff is really a symptom. It's not the actual problem itself. So for all of us, it's going to manifest differently. So hoarding may mean for some acquiring things. And for others, it may more mean an attitude toward things. Some people may be collectors, and so they collect a lot of stuff, while others may compulsively clean and organize and declutter stuff. And there will be some amongst us who will spend more extravagantly, while there will be others who will be frugal and stingy. And then some who may have more disposable income, and then others who are just barely scraping by. But what we all have in common, what draws it together, is that each person still may be letting possessions hold too strong of a grip on their lives. Each person may still have fear or worry or anxiety that dominates the inner world and the way that we all navigate through life. So let me ask you this question. What determines your life? What is the state of your inner world, and how does it play out in what you possess or what you don't possess, and how you use what you have or don't use what you have? These are questions that are central to our discipleship, and they touch on deeper questions for us as well, like what is the meaning of life and where does our security in life really come from? I mean, how much do we really trust in God to care for us, and how are we really doing living out God's purpose in our lives? The proof is in our possessions, and the evidence is hard to ignore. Now, a part of the reason why this parable may strike a nerve with us, and I know it does for me, is that we often want to be like the one who is called the fool in this parable. We can totally track with his line of thinking. I mean, in the presence of some extra cash or some extra stuff, why not save it up? Why not build a little nest egg, invest for the future, create a security net or a cushion, have an emergency fund? I mean, what is wrong with that line of thinking? Now, I want to be careful that you hear what this parable says, because Jesus says, "Fool, tonight you will die. Now who will get the things that you have prepared for yourself? This is the way it will be for those who hoard things for themselves and aren't rich toward God." Let's not miss the underlying issue. Don't be like, "I went to church and Allison was like, don't have a savings account. She said, spend it all, give it all away, be financially irresponsible." I mean, this parable is not saying don't have a savings account. It's not against spending wisely. It's not saying if your business has an extra profitable quarter or you receive an unexpected bonus, it's not saying, well, just go spend it all. That's missing the point of what's going on here. But it is asking you to consider your focus and consider where it is that you do place your trust. Are you relying on yourself, or are you looking to God? What is the source of your security in life? What is the root of your own anxiety, fear, and worry? I mean, how is it that you are able to handle not being in control of the future or not being able to necessarily store up enough to prepare for every possible situation or outcome or all the things that life may throw at you? What are you looking to your possessions to do for you? If you look again at the greater context of Luke chapter 12, this parable is immediately followed by Jesus saying this, "Therefore I say to you, don't worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. There is more to life than food, and more to the body than clothing. Who among you by worrying can add a single moment to your life?" So what about you? How do you not let possessions determine your life? There's a risk that Jesus is talking about as he talks about these different things, and it's the risk of missing a truly rich and full life in God by allowing stuff to have this power over us. If you were to look to God who made the heavens and the earth, if you were to look to God to be your caregiver, your source of hope, your provider, how can that free you from the need to hoard? How can finding the richness of a life that trusts in God, a relationship with God, begin to free you from a life of anxiety and fear and worry? What if following Jesus means freedom? Freedom to align what you do own to God's purposes for your life, God's best for your life, what God wants to do in you and through you and in and for the world. What does that look like? What does that kind of freedom look like? What if you became so intentional with the stuff that you do have and began to align it with who God is inviting you to become? What would that look like? What would that do to the inner state of your life and your world? You see, the idea is not to be minimalist for minimalism's sake, but it's not to reduce your stuff to a certain number, 100 or below, of the items that you own. It's not to do those things that miss the point of the kind of rich and full life that is found in a relationship with a loving and caring God. But it is this idea that can lead to richness and fullness and freedom in God when we let the stuff that can have so much power over us begin to not have so much control. So I want to invite you to just respond to what it is that may be stirring inside of you. I want to invite you to kind of take a look around at your world and at your life, both your outer world, as you can probably envision some of the stuff that you own and carry through life, and then the inner world and how you are doing inside. What do you notice that you tend to cling tightly to? Where do you notice your own tendency to hoard or store up or accumulate? What's the stuff that stirs up anxiety and worry and fear inside of you? And how can you begin to trust God to experience more freedom in your own world? I know for me, and I was even talking with some people after the worship service, that this can be a tough one for me a lot of times. Between trying to move in Seattle and live in this environment and caring for different family members and even my own family history of stuff and belongings, I can find myself in a place where I experience extra levels of fear and anxiety that will just eat away on the inside. And so I want to share with you just a couple of practices that I've found helpful that are things that I've even picked up from others as you're just kind of examining this world. And one of them is the practice of generosity. This parable talks about this richness that we have in God. So how can you kind of begin to counteract this anxiety by doing something where you notice that you cling and hoard, by beginning to open your hand? And so for me, where I feel anxiety around finances, I'll often feel this nudge to get out of that loop of anxiety where I'll say, all right, so what's a cause I can give some money to support that will help me have a different perspective on finances? Sometimes it's looking at my home and my space, and if I'm getting extra kind of clingy or hoardy to my space, my question will be, who can I invite over and open my life to and host for a meal or for some kind of event? I mean, this is something that you can do as individuals or as families and involve your kids or as housemates or groups of friends and begin to say, what can be an act of generosity, whether it's service or giving or something? How can we counteract this culture of hoarding and find a way to give? The other thing that I've done that I found helpful is to have a gratitude practice where there's this richness of blessing in the life in God, but I can be going so fast that I'll miss it. And so trying to stop every day and make note, actual note, of some things that I'm grateful for. And I do the tiniest things that may seem ridiculous, from like the sushi that I had that I really liked, to my dog who was cute, to this conversation I had with a person, to something meaningful I read. So it's every level. But how can you let that practice of gratitude and seeing God's richness and blessing counteract some of the other way of life and how things can be? And then the third thing, and I did this for the first time about 10 years ago, is I was like, God, I want to grow in my trust in you, but I don't know how to do that. Like, I mean, do I read more about it? Like, what can I do? God, how can I begin to really find security in you and trust? And sometimes it seems like music has a way of getting to my heart quicker and better than anything else. And so I made a playlist. And the playlist had no musical connection other than the organizing principle of songs about trust. in God. So it has this great flow from like something really fast and in English to something in Spanish and slow and whatever it is to something with this kind of beat to that. But I created a playlist, and it's even more easy today with Spotify to create playlists to just say, how can I listen to stuff that will reinforce this perspective of who God is? And so even Matt, as the worship team comes up and they're going to sing a song, he had selected a song that's built on these stories in the Gospels that I have as a regular song that I play or sing myself. But I want to invite you, as you're bringing that awareness, and as we have kind of this unique still time in a Sunday, where are you finding that you are clinging and hoarding and gripping on to stuff? Where do you find that possessions and finances can create stress or can have control over you? And how can you begin to find the freedom that Christ offers by trusting him with those things? Would you pray with me? Our God, we thank you for your word. And sometimes your word just goes right there to places that are difficult for us. And we know that even in our society, God, that there is such conversation constantly around minimalism and stuff and how to reduce stuff. And so, God, I pray that you would meet each and every one of us in this space right where we're at. Whether we're people who tend to hoard stuff or whether we're people who tend to go to another extreme of getting rid of stuff or maybe we're somewhere in between. But God, would you meet us right where we're at and help us to identify the way that we approach our possessions and the way that our possessions may control or influence our lives. Help us begin to find a freedom in you, to begin to have only what aligns with your goodness and your purpose and the best that you have for our lives, however uniquely that may play out for each one of us. Help us navigate that as individuals and as families and as groups of people and in this crazy Seattle urban place that we live that has its own set of unique challenges. And Lord, I just pray for each one of us where we may experience our own stories and times of fear or anxiety or worry over different things and how that can just grip us and bring us down or cause so much angst inside. I pray that you would help us find ways, God, to identify what we can do, what can help us recognize the richness of who you are and trust and offer our lives back to you. So help us do it, we pray, in Jesus' name. Amen.